It's a very big misconception that home birth is like super dangerous. First of all, there is like a humongous study of meta-analysis that looked at 500,000 planned home births. This is one aspect that is important because it is the model of care and allowing physiological birth to happen the way that it should. It's just not correct to say that home birth is riskier. It's just not. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the podcast for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And this is part one of a Home Birth 101 episode that is going to give you all of the details I feel like anyone would need if you were considering home birth. You're wondering about the safety, you're wondering about what the statistics say, you're wondering how to prepare your partner or get them on board. This is the episode that is going to tell you all of that information. Who do you choose? How do you decide what kind of a midwife and all of those different sorts of details to see if the logistics make sense for you? Are you actually a good candidate for home birth? All of those different things. So let's go ahead and dive in and then be sure to check out part two.
We're back and Dr. Morgan is going to give us a home birth one-on-one breakdown of everything you need to know about having a home birth, safety, prep, tips, all the things. Dr. Morgan, obviously, if you don't know, has had four amazing births at home and is pregnant with her fifth and is planning to have another home birth. You're just like a home birth, I don't know, machine. It's great. So I feel like you're a great person to learn this from. You've had lots of different types of births at home, which I think is helpful for people to know that not all home births and births go the same, but that you've had a good experience in lots of different situations. So why don't you just take it away and tell us everything we need to know?
Okay. Somebody pointed it out to me. They were like, do you have a home birth episode on the podcast yet? And I was like, shoot, we don't. We have lots of different. I know. Crazy.
Do we have... not?
No. This is the first one. Huh. I share my stories, my home birth stories, but I don't have any... And then, you know, we talk about birth a lot, but in different contexts about specific things, and there is nothing that's like just a general about home birth. So it's like, well, that definitely needs to be a thing. So yes. For anybody who's kind of thinking about it or wondering the deal and what's the safety and stuff too, because I just really want people to understand it's another choice and option that you have if you're low risk. Mm-hmm. And it's not for everybody because of, I'll get into that, but I've had really good experiences. My first home birth, we'll link in the show notes the other episodes of my home birth. And actually, we should link yours too, because they started out as home births and had transfer. And then we have an episode also about transfer that we can link. So anyway, although actually, I think that one comes out after this. We're getting ahead because I'm pregnant. We're recording a lot of episodes. We are getting really on top of it. I'm like so proud of us. Big high five.
I know.
It's been hard to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's good. It's like this is the way that a lot of podcasters who have sustainable weekly shows do it. They like will batch record and things, and especially with two moms who have six kids between them, almost seven, it's like getting us together is a tricky thing. So I'm proud of us that we even do it at all. But yeah, so we have other episodes that are kind of like complimentary to this one. And I just wanted to have something that people can look to get a bunch of information about and have it be a good understanding, I guess. For me, it's been a really good experience. My first one, though, for sure, almost probably ended in transfer, but it didn't. I was just slow to progress. I pushed for 3.5 hours. It was kind of all the things. That baby was fine the whole time, but it was just a very like, had I been in the hospital, it would have been a cesarean situation, or at least the pathway of interventions of like Pitocin and different stuff like that would have been used. So I feel grateful for that, because it is kind of like your first birth is an opportunity as a doorway of like the way that a lot of your other births will go. That's not to say that if you have a primary, like a first time cesarean, that you can't have a vaginal birth afterwards. You totally can. It's just a little bit easier if your body has been able to have the full, like, quote unquote, natural, you know, like physiological experience. So That is definitely a factor of it for me with my different births. I've had really fast ones, I've had medium ones, I've had the, but I've never had anything like breech or twins or I don't know, things like even shoulder dystocia. There's always been like a different fear. Each birth, I have like one predominant fear. Yeah, like
That's so interesting.
I think that with Sunday's pregnancy, yes, my fourth, it was hemorrhage, like postpartum hemorrhage. I did not want, I mean, nobody wants it, but that was like my fixation. With my third birth, it was shoulder dystocia, which is so funny because she was 2 pounds smaller than my other kids. She was like tiny little thing.
That's so interesting.
This one, like, nothing is really coming up for this one so far. I have honestly, I mean, it's like I have not spent much time thinking about this birth, to be completely honest.
Like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. I
I
was
don't.
shocked when I saw you a couple of days ago. I forget that you're pregnant.
I forget I'm pregnant too. And then I'm like, oh, I'm. So my sister-in-law's sister on the property is 10 weeks ahead of me. And to yesterday she was like, I'm 37 weeks. Like,
Oh my
okay,
God.
we're open for the window of home birth, like any time between 37 and 42. And I was like, wait a minute. Oh my gosh, that means I'm turning 27 weeks this weekend. And that means I'm 1 week away from third trimester.
Oh, weird.
Ew. I
You're
am
like
not ready.
potentially last. I say potentially last because who knows with you, but
I
you're
know.
potentially last
I totally
trimester for sure.
understand that the we need to not like be definitive about it. Although there is just, I mean, unless it was an accident, I do not think that we're going to be trying though for another one because Wes is turning 45 this year.
Oh, I don't think it's going to be intentional. It would be an
It
accident.
would be an
I feel like
accident,
it would be so easy. It would such be such an
oh
easy accident.
shush. One of our
You
coworkers.
guys are just so in love, and
Oh,
you
just
just
so in
get
love.
together and make babies. It's great.
Well, I said something to him the other day. I was like, you know that if you don't get a vasectomy, because now he doesn't want one. I mean, he's so back and forth. But he's like, I was like, okay, well, you know that that means like the condom life again. And he was like, no, we can't do that. We got to figure something else out. And I was like, what? No, that's it. That's the option. Like,
Those are the options.
I mean, until I have confirmed ovulation. But one of our coworkers just messaged me on Instagram like 3 days ago and she said, hey, I have a client who's 45 and just has been doing natural family planning and everything's been fine. And she's been done with her kids, but she just miscalculated her cycle and she is pregnant. And I'm like,
Oh
that.
man, that can happen. I mean, for anyone listening, perimenopause, which is, the time before you have menopause, which is when you can't get pregnant, is one of the highest accidental pregnancy times. People think of teen pregnancy, but it's actually higher than
Perimenopausal.
perimenopause. Yeah, mostly just
Perimenopausal
because there's
pregnancy.
no attention on it and no, and everyone's so lackadaisical about it, and your cycle can be all over the place, so you might think that it's one way and then it changes so quickly and drastically. And so, yeah, it's definitely something to be aware of.
Yeah. See, I just, I don't know. I'm trying really hard to get, let's see, when this episode airs, will that be out? No, this one is coming first. I'm trying very hard for next season, season 12, to get this one guy who does vasectomies and vasectomy reversals in California to get on the podcast and be my guest so that I can ask him all the sorts of different
Oh,
things.
what's his name?
Werthermann? Werthermann,
Okay.
Dr.
I was gonna say we
Werthermann?
went to Dr. Bastuba, but that was for like other fertility stuff. He does them too, but I don't
Oh,
know.
well then, I mean, maybe that if this guy never gets back to me, maybe I'll use your contact because I don't know. I'm like constantly in contact with his front desk staff because I want to talk to him on the phone first to be like, hey, would you feel comfortable answering these questions? Like, I want, before we get on a podcast. Anyways, I don't know what we're gonna do, but probably this is my last baby.
Okay, well, hopefully, well, not hopefully, but just we'll see.
No, yeah,
And
hopefully.
so,
Let's
yeah,
no,
you're
no, no, say it.
preparing.
Hopefully. Say it.
Hopefully, it's your last one.
Okay. Anyways, let's go. Okay, let's talk all about home birth. So today, just as an outline, so that you can learn students in a school of
It's a free
healthiest
school.
mother.
You should be
Here's the
so grateful.
syllabus.
Yeah.
It is, we're gonna talk about what it is, why somebody might choose it, who it's for. We're gonna talk about some safety data, statistics, and specifics from humongous studies that have been done to like quell anybody or anybody's partner's fears and worries about it because I know that that's a big thing. We're going to talk about what exactly makes home birth safe. We're going to talk about what happens during a home birth and then, how to make it happen for yourself. So, like building your team, getting your partner on board, the cost of it and insurance. We're going to talk about birth classes and prep, tools and tips. What if it doesn't work out and potential downsides? And then, kind of like a summary at the end. So, it's a lot of different things. It'll be good. So let's just go ahead and start with what is it? So, what is the difference between home birth, hospital birth, and birth center birth. So a lot of people have this erroneous idea in their mind that a birth center, I'm starting with that, is a like middle way point between like a gateway drug between home birth and hospital. It's like they don't really want to be in the hospital, but they're too nervous for some reason to give birth at home. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking to the people who don't want to give birth at home because like they have roommates or they're in an apartment or they mm-hmm. want a tub and they don't have room for it or one of those other reasons not to have a home birth. But it's to kind of clarify the point that in almost all states, and there is some nuances here, going to a birth center is like driving to somebody else's house to give birth. Mm-hmm. It's basically just a home birth somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Okay. So like if you live in Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, or Texas, and there's other ones, so more on the west side of the country, there is like no difference between home and birth center in terms of the medicines that the midwives bring to your house, the abilities that they have, the rules and regulations. Obviously, there's little bits of state-to-state differences, but like they have the same risk criteria, the same provider types, all of that kind of thing. Now, mm-hmm. in a couple of different situations in states like California, New York, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, and Maryland. So all, I mean, besides California, all on the East Coast, there mm-hmm. is a couple of differences sometimes, like whether that's because of birth centers only being able to be staffed by CNMs, which are certified nurse midwives. So they become nurses first, and then they go in through a midwifery program. And mm-hmm. that can sometimes, depending on the state, again, each state is going to have its own nuance. It allows them a broader medical formulary. Because there is certain medications that midwives will bring to your house. Like they do bring postpartum Pitocin to stop a hemorrhage. And there's a couple other medications that they could bring depending on the state that like Idaho just got passed for them to be able to bring one additional, I forget what it's called, medicine now to home births to stop hemorrhage in case like the Pitocin's not working or different things like that. Or, you know, they carry oxygen for the baby and for mom for resuscitation purposes. They carry antibiotics, et cetera, like lidocaine mm-hmm. for stitching. So there's going to be some minor differences. But if you live in Alabama, Nebraska, or Mississippi, that is a situation where birth centers are really one of the only legal out-of-hospital options that you have because home birth is like restricted or illegal right. there. Mm-hmm. So I say all of this because there is some state-to-state difference. People always love to point that out to me whenever I want to say something like a blanket statement that way that they're like, no, sometimes it depends on where you live. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. But it is like still, it's not there. You're not going to get an epidural yeah. at a birth center. You're not going to have a cesarean at a birth center. You're mm-hmm. not going to be induced like with Pitocin during your labor in most states. Like that's not the majority experience. Maybe there is some like little nuances. Okay. But so a home birth, you are really looking at just allowing the body to do a physiological birth, physiological process with very little intervention. There is things that they can do, life-saving measures and whatever. But again, it's not going to be a situation where there's a lot of just medical ability. So if that's mm-hmm. not something that vibes with you, or if you're not low risk and you might need a lot of medical attention and help, or the baby might need it after they're born, then it might not be a good option for you. And we're going to get into that in a second too. Mm-hmm. Actually, let's just go there right now. So like why would someone choose it and then who's it for? So maybe they're choosing home birth because they want to avoid the system inside of the hospital. That is my main reason why I've chosen home birth. Mm-hmm. Or that's why I chose in the beginning. And then now I'm like, well, that's awesome. Like, why wouldn't I yeah. like being at my house? You know? But I am somebody who I, you know, we have friends who also have home births and they really love it. And they almost lean a little bit more free birth-y. And we've had conversations where we've like talked, you know, well, what would happen if you had twins, would you just do like a free birth at home or would you, and I would go to the hospital. So like, yeah. I know that I would be putting myself at risk, I guess, a little bit for some of those interventions, but I also feel really confident to be able to navigate a hospital birth as best as I could. It doesn't really mm-hmm. scare me. Some people though, this is another reason why some people will choose home birth. They have a very scary negative association with the hospital. They've had bad experiences there. It's just, I mean, sometimes it's just like it if it makes you feel very nervous, then it's not going to be a great place to give birth because yeah. you want to give birth wherever you're going to feel safe. Similarly, do not give birth at home just because it's trendy and everybody's doing it. if you actually feel very nervous and you want more support and you want more options and stuff, because then your body's going to be like, what if something goes wrong? What if something goes wrong? Like, I literally never have that thought when I'm in labor. This is naive of me, I think, too. This is just like pure luck and being blessed and naive, because when I'm actually in labor, like maybe leading up to it, like I said, I always have kind of like one predominant fear. Mm-hmm. But once my brain is like gone and I'm having contractions, I'm doing that whole thing, I don't ever think about it again. And my husband said with this most recent birth, when I pulled her up out of the water, he was like, I was like, what did you think? And he's like, oh, I just was like so grateful she was okay and she was breathing. And I was like, really? Like, that was your first thought? I was like, I didn't even, and again, I am fully aware. I am just being very naive here. It was not even a question to me that she was going to breathe. Like, you know, and I don't know why. I don't know. That's just not something that I think about. So like, I am not fearful in where I am being at home. Sometimes,
and that's probably why you actually have successful home births, because I think there's some people, and maybe I'm included in that, where I want to have a home birth, but maybe inherently there's some fear there or some like lack of trust, or you might want it, but you're actually like really scared. And, or maybe there's people around you, like your mom or your partner, that are instilling fears in you constantly. So then you're having these anxieties that like, oh, maybe I can't do this. And so the fact that you are so confident in that, and just, you wouldn't have any of those nervous system blockages that would be blocking the part that is needed for you to have a birth at home that's successful, you know?
As we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing, and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself. Yeah, that's a good point. And I actually do think it was a part of my first birth. Mm-hmm. And then since that experience, now it's been it's like out of my head. You know what I mean? But with my first birth, I did know, like, my biggest fear with that one was getting in my own way in the early labor side of things and stalling out, because that happens sometimes with first time births. And it had happened to some of our like friends. And then they got hospital transferred, and then, you know, like whatever. I was just like, hey, Morgan, don't be an anxious, crazy person. Like, stop trying to control everything. If I can get my own head out of the way and I can just be in my body, which I'm really, really bad at. Okay.
You're so good at it in birth, but you and I both struggle with that in general.
I don't know if I'm good at it. I would just say the birth is so strong that I wonder if that's why I clam up so much and I don't make any noise, because I'm like, in my head, I'm like, WTF, like, what is happening? What is happening? And obviously I know what's happening, but it's still like, it's so intense. You guys, like, some, there's certain moments, like, it's not the entire time, but there's certain moments where I'm just like, this is not real. Like, I can't feel any more. There is no way. But I am not somebody who is like really embodied usually. Like, I don't, you know, really work out, and I really should. I just don't. I don't like feel a lot of things in my body. I'm in my head. I'm just like always in my head. So I knew that with my first birth, that that's going to be my biggest downfall. If I can get out of my head and get into my body and just let it do its thing, then all will be well. But I also know that I could totally derail it, because I'm so like okay, this has to happen, then that, then this, then that, whatever that is. Anyway, okay. So some other reasons why people might choose home birth besides avoiding the system or because of a fear of hospitals would be that maybe in the past they've had really quick births and they like literally can't get to a hospital in time. And so they're like, okay, or they can't get to wherever they maybe it was a birth center that they wanted to go to, but potentially they live far, they don't want to get in a car again, or they don't want to drive. So sometimes people will choose home birth for that reason. Sometimes they'll choose it simply because they want the midwifery model of care, and maybe that's not available at their local hospitals. So the only way to get midwifery care would be to have something like a home or birth center birth. Or similarly, maybe they want water and they want to birth in water and the local options forbid it. Maybe they want to be in the comfort of their own home with like other children. And depending on, this is something I used to say it was not available and I was wrong. So anytime you've ever heard me say this, I was wrong. I did not know. I think that I've just heard in most cases it's not available, but I didn't know it was available ever. That in certain hospitals, you can invite children into the labor and delivery ward and have them there.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, my mom is friends with a labor and delivery nurse that like is here local. And she was telling her that. And I was like, wait, what? I did not know that. I just, maybe people don't do it. Like they just, so you don't really hear about it. But yeah, so if you want your kids to be there, then you have a couple of other options. And actually probably birth centers that have their own restrictions with that too. But at home, you know, it's your house. So whatever you say goes, your pets can be there. Your kids can be there. Mm-hmm. Your kids don't have to be there. You can have them, you know, go be babysat or whatever it is. Okay, so who is home birth for? It's going to be a low-risk woman with a single vertex baby.
Yeah.
So vertex meaning head down. Single meaning there's not multiples, there's not twins or triplets. And you are low-risk. So you have no high-risk association of, say, like having preterm labor, gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, high blood pressure of pregnancy, any placental anomalies like a placenta previa, any cord anomalies like a velamentous cord or a vasa previa or something like that that they're aware of, you know. And then like they can't be breech or have multiples unless you live in certain places. But that's, you know, kind of far and few between, and actually really sadly becoming much less of an option for people. Dr. Stu Fishbein, who I've had on the podcast before, we'll put his episode in the show notes. I just met him at a local event here, and he talked, he just gave a talk to like all these local people who are obsessed with birth. And one of the things that most of the time, what he was talking about was just how broken the system is and how this one trial, which was called the Term Breech Trial, changed breech birth in this country now for like ever. And after it was put out, there was all these policy changes in hospitals. And then some researchers kind of like really looked into it and they realized all these holes in the study. They were like, actually, that doesn't make any sense. This is in like 1991. Okay. Mm-hmm. So prior to 1991, women had options. You had a breech baby. You could have a cesarean or you could have a vaginal birth. That's like how it was. Mm-hmm. And then after the term breech trial happened, it was like, no. And so then residents were not getting any exposure to breech births in hospitals, and most of them have zero idea what to do. So then they're not comfortable with it. Hospitals put, you know, policies in place. No, you can't do it. Partially based on the term breech trial, but also partially based on the fact that they know that their practitioners don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's just this like sad, messed up thing because the trial wasn't even good. What it showed was like more negative outcomes for breech babies. And there is a certain kind of set of qualities, and Dr. Stu talks about it on the podcast where I interview him. What are the criteria that a woman needs to have in place for a vaginal birth to be a good idea? Because yeah, they're not all a good idea. It is a riskier variation of normal. And same thing with multiples. And it's just like, wow, in the future, there's going to be nearly no one who knows what to do if there's a breech baby coming
crazy
out of a vagina. So it's wild.
So weird.
Okay. Also, outside of those criteria of the way that your pregnancy is healthy and you have one baby that's head down. Okay. It does take a special sort of mindset. It requires a different level of ownership and preparation. And so that's on you, right? Like that's a you choice and a you prep thing. because there is not anesthesia available at your house. And getting through and coping with labor contractions and never knowing how long it's going to take is a big question mark and a big undertaking. Mm-hmm. And you also have to remind yourself that this is how we have lived for all of time until the last couple hundred years. And so you can do it. You have to just sort of like pump yourself up and really come to Jesus with yourself about understanding your body is not going to give you something that you cannot handle. Now, a Pitocin contraction is a different thing, but that's, again, not going to be happening at home. But if you're being induced in the hospital, the rate of induction going in tandem with an epidural is very, very high because Pitocin contractions do not behave the same. They are longer and stronger, often more close together. And so it is a different game. It's not coming endogenously from your brain. And because of the way that it's a synthetic oxytocin, it does prevent your brain from having those really big surges of endorphins alongside the contraction to help drug you, make you feel a little bit less pain just naturally. So women who get inductions, like our friend Brooke, and then don't get epidurals are very rare. That's just like not a thing usually, you know, but at home you have to think, okay. And I mean, I've had moments where I'm like, I cannot, this has to stop right now, you know, and it doesn't. And you just still get through. it's, there's a pretty good amnesia of the brain where you're like, I think in my mind, I'm just like, well, I know that I've got, I get through it and then it's over. And then it becomes just like a memory. And I'm not living that day to day. I mean, I would never choose to live it every day, but I would choose to give birth over having mastitis. I will tell you that that's a different kind of pain that, and that's the other thing about birth pain is it's, and I know I have to say this every single time I say it, but people get very triggered about the way that I refer to it as painful, but you guys, that's how I experience it. Okay. So I'm not going to like, I'm not going to be like the pressure waves. I don't talk like that. You can talk like that. That's totally fine. It is a pressure wave. I recognize that. I don't think that's a dumb way to describe it. It's just that to me, I'm like, yeah, no, it hurts. Okay. And it's still cool. And I still love it. And I can't wait to do it again. And yes, of course it's pressure. And yes, it's intensity. And to me, pressure plus intensity equals pain to some extent, you know? Yeah. But it is still a different feeling than having a raw wound on your nipple and inflammation in your breast and then having to feed a baby every 2 hours like with a fever. That combination of types of pain is something that I never would wish on anyone. And it's very terrible and I want to run away from that and I don't want anything to do with that. But birth is not that. It's a different kind of thing. It's and then it's 1 minute and then it goes away and then you have a break. But you do have to have the preparation and mindset around it. So that's definitely a component. And what happened during COVID is that many women were fleeing to, were fleeing to home birth at the very ends of their pregnancies because of the hospital policies that were in place around masking or no doulas, no partners. I mean, what we did in COVID to birthing women was insane. I know. Like, no partner. You think she doesn't live with him? Like,
I know
what, like there, if she's exposed, he's exposed. I
know.
You don't think there's a benefit to her to having her partner here or a doula or somebody to help? Like, I just, obviously. And they were like, well, the risks are too high. And like, it was improper risk mitigation in my opinion, because that is such a sad situation. So a lot of women chose home birth at the ends of their pregnancies. And I've talked with some midwives, you know, it was a very busy time for midwives and they just did the best that they could, but they also had this new variable that they'd not really ever dealt with, which was unprepared women going into home birth.
Oh, interesting.
And being like, oh, okay. Like you guys maybe had a different plan of what was going to happen at the hospital. And that's not what's going to happen here at your house. So we have to like get you there really quick. And it was just like a different thing, you know, work harder on the midwives working with that population, but doing the best that they could by them because they did not want what was offered in the hospital at that time. So anyways, okay, let's talk about some safety data because this is always something that comes up. It's a very big misconception that home birth is like super dangerous. And unfortunately, this is kind of like naturopathic medicine. Midwives are sort of like the naturopathic doctors. Well, they are. They're the naturopathic doctors of the birthing world. And what I say that, what I mean is that if a naturopathic doctor Like one time, I can literally think of one case that happened when we were in school where somebody gave like a turmeric IV. Do you remember this? And their patient died.
I don't know if I remember that, but
Okay, I
yeah.
don't know all the details, I forget, but that doctor just absolutely, like, I don't even know what happened to them, but they were like the laughing stock. They were on every news article and it was just like talked about. So electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms, too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more.
Yeah, like natural medicine is so dangerous. Yet the
Yes.
amount of people like iatrogenic death, which is death caused by a provider and or medication, like the system killed you, is like the number two or three highest cause of death in our country. Meaning hundreds of thousands of people are dying every single year from medical intervention. And it's like, oh, well, that's just what it is.
Exactly. You never hear about an MD who is, but the one death from an ND, oh my God. Same thing with home birth midwives. Like a baby dies at home and you are never going to hear the end of it. Everyone's going to share that story. Baby dies in the hospital. Oh, they did everything they could.
That's just what happens. It's
Ah,
like, oh my
damn.
God.
You did everything that you could and that was it. And it's just like, shut up. Like, of course, there's definitely unskilled practitioners. Practitioners make mistakes. Like, of course, there's always going to be the very few outliers of weird things. But the fact of the matter is that birth is an inherently unknown, humongous transformation of a baby that is in the womb to a baby that's out. And it is a risky time period, and not every baby is going to make it. No matter what we do, no matter what level of intervention we have, not every baby will make it. And that is sad and scary, and it's animal, it's human. Like, welcome to life. This happens in the natural world too. And unfortunately, actually, in the last 30 years in this country, our maternal outcomes and newborn outcomes are only worse. They have worsened despite all of the different interventions that we have in place now, more and more and more interventions every single decade, and worse outcomes for women. The best outcomes for women are in the Netherlands and in Australia. And guess the common denominator between the Netherlands and Australia? Their midwifery model of care is the head. That is the leading. And they have way more home births. Well, the Netherlands, like 18% of women give birth at home. In the Netherlands, 1% of Americans give birth at home. And so it's like, actually, in Idaho, too, where we are, 8% of births are at home here. We have one of the highest home birthing rates of the whole country. But it's not the systems in Australia and the Netherlands that are keeping their women and babies alive. It is the model of care and allowing physiological birth to happen the way that it should, which all farmers know, right? I mean, yes, farmers have to get involved sometimes because we've crossbred these animals so much that it's like not necessarily a natural matchup. Like, the cow's dad is much bigger than the cow's mom, and so we maybe need to help, or like same thing with a lamb or a sheep or whatever. But vast majority, I mean, like, think about pandas. They're doing everything they can to figure out why can't pandas just breed, like, and they're just leaving them alone. They're making like these whole habitats. They're like trying to figure it out because they just cannot figure it out. I mean, honestly, the fact that pandas are even real,
I
sometimes
know.
I'm like, that's not real. There is no way.
That's how I feel about all the animals in Africa. I'm just like, this
No,
is a giant
giraffes,
genetic
like,
experiment. It feels like it was all CRISPR back in the day, like many
I know.
eons ago.
It feels like one of those like animated movies, those like AI animated movies of like children's drawings.
Totally, but we accept it as just how it is. But you guys like look at a giraffe and then look at an elephant and then look at that. one creature that I saw at the zoo in San Diego that has like the head of a horse and the body of a zebra and like the legs of an antelope. I mean, it literally looked like it was stuck together. Like, someone's like, let's take all these different parts. I'm like, there's no way that that was like natural evolution. I don't know. It just seems so backwards and bizarre, but yeah.
Yeah, and the platypus, like, are you kidding? What is that? Lays eggs but gives its baby milk?
I know, with a bill, and it's just, yeah, animals are crazy.
Animals are crazy. But okay, anyway, I guess my point is that we want to think that, oh, America, we have all this amazing technology. We do, and we have really good science in a lot of ways, but our maternity, our obstetric model of care is failing so miserably, and no one wants to talk about it. And mm-hmm. It's like, yo, what's happening, you guys? This is just only getting worse. And yeah, there's probably a piece of it that's like, well, the national health is not good. And mm-hmm. So women are coming in with this overall healthier, less healthy bodies, less healthy pregnancies, whatever. But it's also like, cesareans are the most performed surgery of any surgery in this country. So it's like mm-hmm. a 35% national average. So many of those would be unnecessary if we were able to like distinguish them out. And then induction rate has increased to like, what is it? Is it like 25 to 30% of women now, first time moms, are being induced for not a medical reason, not because they have cholestasis, not because they have preeclampsia, not because they have something going on, IUGR, so intrauterine growth restriction, and they actually really need it. And it's like, okay, this baby needs to come out now. In those cases, cool. I'm so happy we have induction, right? But like, to just do it because you're 41 weeks or because your doctor's out of town, or
because they just say so. I have a fertility patient who was going through IVF, and her IVF doctor told her before she was ever pregnant, you'll probably need a C-section. She's like very healthy, very fit, and she's just the way you look. Like, I think you'll probably just end up with a C-section, so just plan for that. She wasn't even
the way you look.
Yet. Like, the way your cervix is, like, it's just kind of small, and so you're probably going to need a C-section. I'm like, who says that?
That okay, is also, like, that's awesome. Like telling somebody, I mean, it's not obviously the same thing, but what if doctors were just like looking at some labs, they're like, you're probably going to end up with cancer. So like, you know, just, it's like, no, you don't, why now? Would you ever put that in someone's mind? Not that, I mean, a cesarean is not cancer, obviously, but it's like, if someone had told me that Gage was going to be over 9 pounds old, like my first baby was over 9 pounds, I'm so glad I did not know, because mm-hmm. I had it in my head he was 7 pounds because my midwife did a really good palpation. I don't know if she actually thought he was going to be bigger and she just told me 7, but if she did that, thank you. Because it would have gotten in my head when things were hard and I wasn't dilating and I couldn't push him out. I would have been like, see, he's stuck. This is, yeah. He's stuck. Like I'm glad I didn't know but so for somebody to say that and then now watch this woman, this poor woman is going to like go into labor. And if it gets hard or she feels stuck or whatever, she's probably going to have that doctor's voice in her head saying,
like, oh, I have a small cervix, so I can't.
See? Yeah. Like, you were set up for a cesarean. Sorry. Yeah. Like, don't say things like that.
It's such a cultural thing, though. It's such a medical cultural thing.
And even if you think something, even if you, so like my mom has noticed being a labor and delivery nurse for years in like when I was a child, she said, she's like, there is something about like shorter women. She's mm-hmm. like, I don't know what it is. I've just noticed it. Like really, really short women, like 5 feet, you know, like littles have a harder time giving birth. And I'm like, well, yeah, but don't they make like smaller little babies too? And she's mm-hmm. like, yeah, sometimes, but it's odd. And I've asked many midwives this exact same question too. And it's okay. Now here I am being the person to like say this, but they're like, yeah, sometimes it does seem that way, that there's like maybe something to do with that. And I don't know if it's like mm-hmm. torso length or if it's, are they married to somebody who's massive or is it because of the baby? But then I think about like our friend Naz just had her third child in mm-hmm. like 6 minutes. She was supposed to get induced and started to go into labor the night prior and got to the hospital and the baby was born in 6 minutes. And her husband's like 6'4" and she's 5 foot. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so that doesn't obviously match up and line up. But anyway, right. Who freaking knows? Like there's so many things that go into this. But I just think if you have a thought like that as a practitioner, don't say it. Yeah. It's not helpful. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Like that's not, you don't have a crystal ball. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Okay. Let's talk about some stats. So for low risk women, first of all, there is like a humongous study of meta-analysis that looked at 500,000 planned home births. This is one aspect that is important because a home birth being planned and then a home birth accidentally happening do have a little bit of different risk profiles. Like if it was just coming out too fast or the woman didn't have medical care or something like that, that's a different situation. When you have a planned home birth, again, the woman isn't of the right mindset and preparation of understanding what's happening. Plus, you have a skilled practitioner who's been watching her doing prenatal care, who knows what's happening with this. Those situations are what I'm talking about here. So 500,000 planned home births for low-risk women, a home birth does not increase perinatal or neonatal death or complication in comparison to hospital birth. End of story. I mean, that's the ending conclusion, but let's go into some of the nitty-gritty. So across tens of thousands of these births and of these women's study, there were no maternal deaths reported in either group. This is a huge meta-analysis that was done in 2019. Okay. Also, the benefit that was seen, not only is it like not unsafe, which I think a lot of people think, but then there was all these benefits. So there were significantly fewer interventions in the women that were planning home birth, to the tune of 40% less likely to have a cesarean than if they had given birth in the hospital, 60% less likely to have a forceps or vacuum delivery than if they were giving birth in the hospital, 70% less likely to get an epidural, obviously because you can't, but if you had a transfer, even if like they had transferred, 55% less likely to have an episiotomy, which is where they cut your perineum. They don't really do that that often anymore, but I mean, if they're going to do it, it's usually going to be in the hospital, not at home. Because unless I have actually heard of episiotomies happening once in a while at home, if there is like a really stuck baby, but it's like a very last line of escalating the interventions to be like, okay, like we're going to do this little cut. We're going to get the baby out like right now. And sometimes you got to do that, but just like, okay, routine episiotomy that they used to do in the 90s. No, they're not doing that. And then 60% less likely to need Pitocin at all at some point in the labor. Which, like, yeah, because if we're allowing our natural hormones to go, most of the time that's going to work well. Sometimes we do need it. I totally recognize that. Sometimes we need it. Sometimes the birth is just not going right and we don't know why. Sometimes the birth takes a dramatic, scary, emergent turn. And thank God for hospitals when we have them. But we have to reframe in our mind that for the vast majority of people, does it make sense that everybody needs all of this intervention? Like, no, of course not. Like, how would we even be here? Alive on this planet. Home birth doesn't just compare well then to hospital birth. It actually reduces interventions by a lot. So then there's also, let me continue here, specifically with maternal outcomes, there's 75% lower rates of maternal infection, 30% lower rates of postpartum hemorrhage. Okay, that's cool. 30, not percentage here, but just much lower rates of severe tearing in the third and fourth degree of the perineum. And that's probably largely due to the lack of epidural capability, because it's difficult when a woman is pushing with an epidural to feel and stretch and allow that sort of natural feedback where she's like panting through the crowning and all of those different phases. And so sometimes they'll just like, they're being coached, push. Okay. Like, you know, hold your breath, chin to chest, instead of like any kind of an open epiglottal pushing, which is what you should be doing. Which is where you're like still making some sort of a sound like, you know, but your glottis is open. You're not holding your breath. You're not increasing that pressure so much. And they're just like a natural allowing of the tissues to open. Now, sometimes babies come so fast. That's definitely another area where I feel like with fourth degree tears, I specifically hear those in two situations. One is the epidural did not feel anything, had no idea what was going on. And they didn't like allow the stretching, which is sad. And then two, a birth where the baby was just like fetal ejection reflex, the baby was barreling out of her. And okay. And another thing to note is that this information applies both to first time moms and experienced moms, with like just a little bit of nuance here. And I think that that really matters, because we do always sort of talk about like the first time mom is a bit of a like different animal. And, but in this study, the trends were pretty similar for both groups. So the first time mom group did still have fewer interventions overall. They had a similar hemorrhage risk though. The only notable difference really was the severe tearing, was that it was similar to hospital birth moms for the first time ones, but it wasn't worse. Yeah. So that's good. And this is really like, again, in those settings of low risk plus the good quality care of a skilled practitioner. And with trained midwives, and in systems where home birth is, you know, recognized in the area and is respected, the midwives are respected. It's not like this, like, you know, super underground thing. Like maybe in Alabama, I'm sure there's definitely lay midwives that are still doing births, and that's a little bit of a harder situation because now, say you show up at the hospital for a transfer and they're going to treat you really poorly because they're meanies and they think that you were making a bad choice. That's a different situation. But in areas where home birth is just like another option available to people, all these outcomes are really good.
That's good.
Okay. So then let's see, in these large studies of about 500,000 births, last thing I'll say here, there was no increase in infant death, no maternal deaths, and dramatically lower rates of C-section, epidurals, and overall interventions. Even lower rates of infection and complications for the mom. So it's like, it's just not correct to say that home birth is riskier. Yeah. It's just not. If you are of a higher risk category, then yeah, maybe. But in the cases where you're not, like, the studies do not show that. Look, there's many brands of botanical or herbal medicines to choose from, and one of my favorites right now for the season of motherhood is Earthly. One major benefit of using plant-derived supplements is that you get the synergistic effects of all of the compounds that the plant has to offer instead of just one single compound, because they are meant to work together. And then beyond that, the geniuses at Earthly have combined plants in such a smart way to complement each other, like with the Nourish Her Naturally tincture, which is almost like a Nora tea, the pregnancy tea that's nettle, oat, red raspberry, and alfalfa, but it's in a tincture form. This Nourish Her Naturally tincture also contains dandelion, catnip, and spearmint to also increase your mineral and antioxidant intake in pregnancy while you are still benefiting from the nervous system effects and all of the different things that each plant has to offer, and then the way that each plant works together synergistically. Earthly has a magnesium lotion for your calves and feet at night in case they start cramping, a mama's tummy relief tincture to aid in nausea, and then postpartum support herbs like Ease the Ache tincture to help with the pain of afterbirth contractions, which if you've never felt those, my goodness. They also carry an herbal sitz bath blend that you can make into peri pads, put in your peri bottle, do a traditional sitz bath, or something like a yoni steam with. For all your motherhood needs and your pediatric needs, head to earthly.com to check out their huge collection of effective herbal remedies, and then you can use the code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 10% off your order. So again, head to earthly.com because nature is medicine.
Yeah, and that's one thing that people need to remember when they hear stories. Like, that's the one thing everyone always wants to say. With fertility, it's everyone tells you all the reasons why you can get pregnant because they have a friend whose aunt did this XYZ thing and then it happened. It's like, of course, exactly. That should be your situation too. And in birth, it's like, oh, I heard this terrible, horrible, scary thing. And so therefore, that's going to happen to you. And it's, you don't know the context of that. You know, a lot of times when even scary things happen in the hospital, it could have been a high risk situation to begin with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't always compare apples to apples or apples to oranges or whatever they say.
Yeah. And it's hard because if you talk with people who work in hospitals, you have to remember that all they see day in and day out is pathology and issues. Yeah. And that's the problem with giving birth as a low risk woman in the hospital, is that they are trained to see problems and issues and pathology. So they're going to look at you and they're going to try to find it, even if it's not there. The experts in birth, in physiological birth, are midwives. Like, hands down, they just are. No one's going to argue with you about that. OBGYNs are experts in surgery. Okay. Cesareans, big deal. That's a big skill set that they have. And pathological birth, where there's something going on. And thank God for it. Yeah. But it's like we put ourselves, gosh, I wish there was an analogy I could think of. You're really good at this. Come on.
Wait, what is it about? Tell me the thing. I'll think
okay.
Of it.
Okay. I'm using you. I'm like going to ChatGPT prompt you. Okay. So it's a situation where we're putting people who don't need help in a situation of people who are going to like look at them and try to manage all of it. And then we wonder why it doesn't go right. Like they're going to look at you through a different lens, but you don't actually even need any help. It's like, what do you expect? Like, you can't expect to go in there and not be poked and prodded.
Yeah. If you are a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right?
Yes.
If you're a surgeon,
keep going.
Everything needs cut because that's what you do. That's your tool. And so you're basically saying, I don't want to be treated like a nail, but you are put into a sea of hammers. And they're like, well,
we just you're like, hammers help me give birth, but I'm not a nail. I'm like a rubber band.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm just going to pound you.
Okay. And but they hammer, like that's literally what they do. And that's a good thing because sometimes we need to hammer nails, you know, sometimes we need to cut things. So yeah, they always say, if you don't want surgery, don't go see a surgeon. You know, people are like, well, go to a surgeon for an opinion on this. It's like, they're gonna say surgery. That's their tool, right? And sometimes that's needed. But yeah, that would be the analogy, is that if you do not want to be treated like a nail, don't go into a sea of hammers.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that. Exactly. Yeah, like, that's what it's like. Whereas if you're like a rubber band or something like that, then you're going to go and want to be taken care of by the rubber bands. Yeah. Or something like whatever. Okay. So there's that.
Okay. This episode is amazing. And when we recorded this, there was so much that Dr. Morgan wanted to say that we're actually going to split this into two episodes. So we're going to wrap up this episode and then you will be able to listen to the rest of it in the next week's episode.
Are you pregnant or you're trying to conceive and you're looking for reliable natural health information about how to have a healthy pregnancy and also prepare for the future steps in motherhood to come, like the birth, the breastfeeding, and the postpartum? Because I have got you. So this is exactly the reason why I made the 6-week pregnancy call. And it's my most comprehensive resource. It's the thing that I absolutely love. I've poured my heart and soul into it. It's all of the things that I wish that every woman knew when they are entering motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 class, and a postpartum planning course all in one. And normally I run it as a class with live Q&A calls, but now it's available in a content-only format so that you can purchase it at any time and start learning immediately. It's called the lessons-only format, and it is just only all of the video lessons that you'll get access to for forever. So log on to milkmedicine.com/lessons-only or check out the link in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.